That's in a couple of minutes' time here on BBC Radio 3, after we've heard a summary of the news this lunchtime from David Cornett.
Opposition forces in Libya claim to have taken control of the oil town of Ras Lanouf and a hamlet 30 miles to the west. Earlier, a BBC correspondent was able to reach the town of Brega to confirm that the rebels had captured it from pro-Gaddafi forces. It follows continuing coalition airstrikes. France says its planes were in action late yesterday, hitting 7 Libyan aircraft in the west of the country. The Pope has called for talks in Libya to bring about a ceasefire, saying he's worried about the safety of civilians. He told pilgrims in St. Peter's Square in Rome that political and military leaders must use all diplomatic means available to work towards reconciliation. Water at one of the reactor buildings at the damaged Fukushima nuclear power plant in Japan has tested 10 million times more radioactive than normal. Workers who've been trying to contain the fallout were evacuated from the building. The Nuclear Safety Agency says it's highly possible that the water is coming directly from the reactor itself. Reports from Syria say troops have taken control of key areas in the port city of Latakia a day after violent anti-government demonstrations. It's reported that 10 members of the security forces and 2 gunmen have been killed. Syrian officials have blamed the violence on people trying to incite sectarian strife. Police have been accused of failing to do enough to protect businesses from the violence which broke out yesterday during and after the mass protest in London against government cuts. More than 200 people were arrested. The former Deputy Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, Brian Paddock, says that with 4,500 officers on duty, police should have done more to protect property. Wiltshire police have charged a man with the murder of Sian O'Callaghan, the 22-year-old woman who disappeared after she left a nightclub in Swindon 8 days ago. Her body was found on Thursday in Oxfordshire. Christopher Halliwell, who's 47 and comes from Swindon, will appear before the town's magistrates tomorrow morning. And the weather, dry and bright, with sunny spells for many areas, but also fair amounts of cloud across the Midlands, and a few isolated showers are also likely during the afternoon. It'll stay mainly dry for most parts overnight, with clear spells. BBC News and Weather at 1:02.
And that was David Cornett. Well, we have music by Vivaldi, Coates and The Beatles in an hour from now in this week's selection of Radio 3 requests. And don't forget that a little later today we're live at the Roundhouse in Camden for a second visit to this weekend's Voices Now Festival in North London. Alad Jones hosts a live edition of the choir at 6:30. But next, this lunchtime, it's time to join Catherine Bott for today's edition of the Early Music Show.
It's late in the 12th century. We're in Provence, in the south of France, and Guiraud and Allemander, both poets and musicians, are discussing the finer points of love between a man and a woman. Guiraud begins the debate, saying, "If I ask your advice, pretty friend Allemander, don't be hard on me. I'm following all the rules for being in love and getting nowhere with your mistress." And Allemander replies, "For heaven's sake, man, you've just got to go along with whatever she wants." And he thought he was doing everything right.
Forte in suida. kämt der Jablus was Lunda, mal gut kämt Chamela.
Chili, 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 chili.
Love's Rulebook, flirtatiously debated by Montserrat Figueras and Josep Benet with Hesperion 20. The original words and music of this tenso, or musical debate, were probably a collaboration between Guiraud de Bonnel and a lady called Alamanda, who was one of the Trobaerits, female troubadours. In today's programme, I'm looking at the exceptional self-revelatory poetry that was written and set to music by these well-born, witty women. My inspiration is a delightful compliment paid to the early music show by an internationally acclaimed woman writer of today, creator of V.I. Warshawski, Sarah Paretsky. Her latest book, Bodywork, contains an actual name check for the programme. I'm delighted to say, though, that Sarah is with me in the studio now. I particularly enjoy the name of the early music group that you've created to appear on this fictional episode of the early music show. And it's called High Plain Song. That's a wonderful name. Well, how did you think of it?
I was trying to think of something that would merge both the concept of early music and the Midwest of America, where the Great Plains. And somehow that it came together with that.
So they're on the early music show to play music by the Trobaerits, these female troubadours. What do you think of the Trobaerits' poetry?
It was a real eye-opener to me. I loved it. I loved the finding out about these women who were doing this kind of courtly poetry. And I knew nothing about them until I started this.
Do you think there's a particular feminist point to be made in these poems, or do they read to you just like women we know today?
I think that we're always taken aback when we realize that our ancestors had just as much spirit and love of independence as we do. And it really shines through in these 14th century poems in a way that is inspiring and beautiful. I suppose it's a theme that runs through a lot of music and a lot of writing, too, that the female presence has to be somehow almost unhuman, not a real flesh and blood creature who might have real feelings, and whereas from the male perspective, she has to be utterly chaste in order to be desirable.
Sarah Paretsky. In her novel, the fictional group High Plain Song perform a dialogue about how men and women should treat each other, written by the real 12th century Maria de Ventadorn. Sadly, we couldn't find any recordings of that piece, but the duet that opened the show was in very similar vein. Who were the Trobaerits? Well, the word means literally finder or inventor. It evolved into the modern French trouver, but we're not talking about modern France here. There was no such thing as France in the 12th century, rather a number of independent regions, most with their own languages and cultures. The region that hatched the troubadours and Trobaerits was Provence, whose language, the Lingua d'Oc, or language of Occitania, was a mongrel of Portuguese and Spanish with bits of French thrown in. Troubadours are often seen as mere nomadic buskers, wandering minstrels, but that's not the case at all. They and the Trobaerits were serious poets, largely literate and often well-bred. Their lyrics and some of their tunes have survived because they were written down. Men have always written songs about unattainable girls, and the troubadour culture was all about grand declarations of preferably unrequited passion and undying service to some idealised beauty, preferably from a higher social class, and married. Devoting yourself to one of these creatures would make you a better person. Trobaerits, on the other hand, as one writer says, the very ladies at whose skirts the troubadours had knelt, the wives and daughters of the lords of Occitania, offered a different viewpoint. Here's a frank confession from the Contessa de Dia, born in around 1140. I've been in great distress because of a knight who once was mine. I want everyone to know that I loved him too much, and he betrayed me in the end because I wouldn't sleep with him.
Thank you. Chats Grantala Nauria
If only I could lie beside you for an hour. I'd give almost anything to have you in my husband's place, but only if you do what I want. Quite a big departure from the self-abasement of male courtly love. Symphony performing Estat e en greu cosirier by the Contessa de Dia, introduced by an instrumental version of the same melody, Non es meraviglia, by Bernard de Ventadorn. As Symphony's director, Stevie Wishart, writes, Bernard's instrumental is included to explain one method of putting tunes to these poems that have come down to us without music. That's exactly what Jake and his colleagues in Sarah Paretsky's novel are doing with this repertoire. And if these lyrics are to be sung, it's a thoughtful way to go about it. As to the accompaniment, medieval churches, manuscripts and books of ours are filled with depictions of male and female instrumentalists playing plucked, bowed and blown instruments. So making these songs into ensemble pieces is a very attractive way of presenting them to a modern audience. Male writers tend to adopt the persona of perfect gentle knight in their songs, but Trobaritz write as themselves, women we'd recognise today. Their poetry is direct, powerful, subjective, but seldom sorry for itself, and it's frequently about adulterous liaison. Here's another lyric from the Contessa de Dia, this time revelling in the love of a courteous and worthy knight. I've picked a fine and noble man in whom merit shines and ripens, generous, upright and wise, with intelligence and common sense. Contessa de Dia in Love, Ab Joy, performed by Hesperion 20. The Contessa was married to a noble lord, although I suspect she's not writing about him in that song, and left us more than any other of the Trobirets, 4 poems. The only biographical information about these women is contained in the introductions to their songs, or canzos, added when they were copied into song collections. These little biographies, or vidas, are pretty unsatisfying, but the one for the Contessa de Dia has a ring of truth. The Countess of Dia was the wife of Guillaume de Poitiers, a lady beautiful and good, and she fell in love with Rimbaud d'Orange and wrote many good songs in his honour. Perhaps it's best to let the lyrics speak for themselves. Here's one by 3 women of whose lives nothing at all is known, but they ask some very pertinent questions in this song. Alaïs and Iselda need to know something from Carenza. Is it a good idea to get married and have to make lots of babies? Or should they enjoy the single life? Carenza advises her friends to become brides of Christ, so much more desirable than marriage to an ordinary man. The performers there were Sinfony. Once women were married, the bed was made, and they must lie in it. Or must they? The poets of Occitania in the south seem to have inspired those in the north who wrote in French, and, cheating very slightly but I can't resist it, there's a subset of songs from the woman's point of view which tell it like it is. They're called the Songs of the Ill-Wed. Listening nowadays, you can bewail the violence and relish the defiance in this song at the same time. Here are Duo Trobairitz with the anonymous 13th century ditty, Why Does My Husband Beat Me So? Hubby is angry because he thinks wifey's up to something. And he's right. Okay, these songs were probably written by men, but that one is done with a light touch by Faye Newton and Hazel Brooks, duo Trobaeritz. It's impossible to say for certain at this distance in time whether the women poets of these songs ever performed them themselves. It seems to be a given that the Trobaeritz were all ladies, so they may have had staff to entertain them. This is where the joglar come in. The word comes from juggler, and they were the lower order of performers, the minstrels and spech acts of their day. But surely some of these lyrics were too personal, too private, to be heard in even semi-public. Men putting women on pedestals in their songs, that's one thing, and you can imagine what real medieval women privately thought of that. But some of the lyrics of the Trobaeritz read like a private diary. Husbands, men in general, couldn't have coped with hearing them, surely. One thing proper courtly ladies were authorised to do was needlework. And there's a type of song to accompany this hobby, the chanson de toile, or embroidering song. They were usually tales of romance and legend, often with a moral. This is the story of Bella Yolanze, who sat in her chamber, stitching a fine robe for her absent lover, and sighing. And suddenly, who should walk in but the man himself?
Chanson chante, Deus tante, Deus sinon.
and when her lover arrives, they straightway lie down on the bed to play a French game. Sequentia, with the anonymous song Bella Yolance, with a French text. One of the most tender and unusual love songs of the Trobaerits is Na Maria, a frank declaration of love by Beatrice de Romance, writing in the 13th century. Lady Maria, in you lie my desire and my heart, and from you stems all my happiness. Na Maria by Beatrice de Romance, performed by Symphony, whose singer is Vivian Ellis. And like many of these songs, it has at the end an envoi, in which the song is sent out to find the love object. To you my stanzas go, for in you are all the good things one could ask of a woman. Needless to say, the idea that this could just be a beautiful love song from one woman to another is too much for many experts, who have called it a literary exercise, a piece of shameless flattery, or a religious allegory, or even written by a man with a similar name. I'm happy to let it be something much simpler. This is what C.S. Lewis thought about the poetry of the troubadours, and by implication the Trobriarets, although his gang of inklings might have preferred to leave them out of things. For him, the troubadours effected a change which has left no corner of our ethics, our imagination, or our daily life untouched. Compared with this revolution, the Renaissance is a mere ripple on the surface of literature. It's good to think of women writers playing their part. All the poems in today's programme have been imaginatively turned into songs by the use of existing tunes and different scorings. When I was performing this repertoire more than 20 years ago, my mentor was John Stevens of Magdalen College, Cambridge. He believed that the addition of instrumental accompaniment could oversimplify the subtle musical language of the tunes, and that the best way to bring out the double charm of exquisite words married to eloquent melody was to sing them unaccompanied. So that's how we'll hear our final song. Referring back to the new novel by Sarah Paretsky, who was talking to me at the beginning of the programme, the musicians in the novel, who are performing the songs of the Trobriarets, tell the early music show listeners that we only have music for one poem. Well, this is it. A Chantar Mer de Socio Novolria, again by the Contessa de Dia. It's the song of a heartbroken woman who would rather not tell the story of her unhappy love affair, but in singing achieves a rueful detachment that no man could match, gently reminding her faithless lover in the envoi that pride goes before a fall. My thanks to Sarah Paretsky for talking to me. Her detective heroine is, as V.I. Warshawski's lover Jake says, like the Trobriarets, a woman of high courage.
A chantar mer de socio novolria, tant mer angur de lui qui suia mia. Careula mais que nea regesia, vas lui non val. Say.
Music and poetry by the Trabeirites, the Contessa de Dia. It was sung poetically on that recording by Catherine Bott. How lovely to hear Catherine singing as well as presenting the early music show today, which was produced by Rebecca Bean. Well, in next Saturday's programme, Lucy Skeeping looks at the lives and the music of three now uncelebrated composers from the 18th century Russian imperial court, the so-called Golden Three, Berezovsky, Bortnyansky and Viadel. That's at the same time on Saturday, just after the 1 o'clock news here on BBC Radio 3.
Free your imagination. Books on the BBC.
A boy is picked up wandering the streets of Liverpool. His well-meaning rescuer takes him home. The boy, they call him Heathcliff, joins a brother and sister. The brother fights with the newcomer. The girl is fascinated by him. They grow close. And so it begins.
Heathcliff is my reason for living. If the whole world was laid waste and only he remained, I would still be happy.
One of the most extraordinary novels in English.
The servant is now the master.
Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, newly adapted for Drama on 3, tonight at 8 o'clock.
Well, that's preceded this afternoon by a live edition of The Choir, which comes from the Voices Now Festival in Camden at the Roundhouse. Alan Jones will be there to introduce five groups, including a performance by the Latvian Radio Choir, who took part in our first visit to the festival on Friday night here on Radio 3. Well worth a revisit on the BBC iPlayer if you missed it. That's The Choir tonight at 6:30. And following Drama on 3, our Sunday feature this week considers the poetry and the legacy of Rainer Maria Rilke, whose poetry had such a big impact on many writers and musicians. Among the Ranks of Angels is our Sunday feature this week. You can hear it at 9:30. But next this afternoon on Radio 3, more of your letters and emails in Radio 3 Requests with Chichi Nwanuku.
Hello and thanks for joining me. Here's an enigmatic starter from a composer whose music is poetic and simply showered with stories. A little vignette from Bohemia.
Thank you.
simply titled An Impression in A Minor, that delicate and lyrical titbit by Zdeněk Fibich was performed for us there by Radoslav Kvapil. Fibich was a major Bohemian composer whose life spanned the 19th and 20th centuries, writing hundreds of descriptive pieces, literally describing the minutiae of some of his most intimate moments and mood changes of the passion of his life, Agnieszka Schulzeva. As requester Dr. Bob Bridgeford from Lambourne in West Berkshire reminded me, one of Fibich's pieces is devoted to a mole on her neck. If you've just joined us, welcome to the programme. I have an eclectic mix for you today, from Shostakovich to Schubert via Lyapunov and a certain famous quartet of lads from Liverpool. But first, some Vivaldi. A request for his setting of the Beatus Vir comes courtesy of Cyril Pavey. I don't know if I've ever heard it broadcast by the BBC, says Cyril, although there is a Radio 3 connection. It was used as the incidental music for a production, in Russian, of Othello in Bodmin in 1954, with the part of Iago played by midshipman John Drummond. Cyril's teasing us a bit here, as younger listeners might not know that following his naval studies, the young Mr. Drummond joined the BBC and later became a rather famous controller of this very station. Well, we have played this piece a handful of times, Mr. Pavey, but perhaps not as much as this lovely work deserves. So here you go. In this work for double orchestra and choir, the Schola Cantorum of Oxford and Northern Chamber Orchestra are conducted by Jeremy Summerlee and Nicholas Ward.